We're holding on Pei Zion Omud Beis by the Mishnah. We learned in the previous Mishnah that there were two measuring cups for dry things in the Beis Mikdash according to the Chachamim, or three according to the Meir, two or three types, that is, because we said there were many copies of each one, but we said there was an Isarin and a half an Isarin, and according to the Meir, there were two types of Isarin. Next, let's talk about liquid measurements. Mishnah says, Sheva Midas Shalach Hoyer B'Mikdash. There were seven measuring cups for liquids in the Beis Mikdash. Hin. Number one was a hin, which, as we're going to see later on, the hin was used for making the Shemin HaMishpa, and then after that it was never used again, but nevertheless, they have this hin.
A revi'at,
there's a quarter of a hin, three logim. A hin consists of 12 logim. A hin consists of 12 logim, except for the Shemin HaMishpa. There was no other time ever when it came to the Karbonis where you need a hin of anything.
Really?
Yeah, that's what we'll see.
In amount, yeah.
So that's fair. Nevertheless, they had that hin measure. A hin, by the way, is 12 logim.
12
logim. And a log is around a pint or a little bit less. So you're talking somewhere around a gallon to 2 gallons, depending which process you follow. Okay, so that's a hin. B'chatzi hin. Then there was a half a hin, and we're going to discuss later on what they used each one of these for. Well, shlish is a hin, or revi is a hin, and they had a third of a hin and a quarter of a hin. So a half a hin would be 6 logim, a third of a hin is 4, a quarter of a hin is 3. Log, b'chatzi log, or revi is log, then they had a log, a single log, a half a log, and a quarter of a log. Rabbi Eliezer ben Tzaddik, I remember blood, Rabbi Eliezer says, they didn't have separate measuring containers for these fractions of a hin. The Tanakhama is saying that they had, besides the hin itself, they had a half a hin and a quarter of a hin, and so forth. Rabbi Eliezer ben Tzaddik is saying they didn't have separate measuring cups for a half a hin and a third, etc. Instead, shnosei soyer by hin, there were... There were markings in the one big hin measure. You can see the diagram in Rashi. Ad kan la parva, ad kan la ayo, ad kan la tevesh, like you have in a measuring cup. Up to here for a par, up to here for an ayo, up to here for a tevesh. Right, but not separate. Reb Shimon oim lo hoyer shom hin. Reb Shimon says there wasn't a hin there at all. Because after all, what would they have been using the hin for? The only thing in history that was ever used for was for making the Shemin HaMishpah.
Shemin HaMishpah of...
That Moshe made in the Midbar to anoint Aaron and his sons, the Kohanim, and to anoint the Mishkan and all the Kelim. But after that, we learned in Horius that same Shemin HaMishpah continued to exist throughout the generations, and that happened. It never lost any volume. It still had the entire 12 logim of it. It started with 12 logim, and you end up with 12 logim. Okay. There's going to be kind loss of it as well, yeah. It's hidden under the Beis Mikdash, together with the other things, together with the Aron and the jar of Mon and so forth. Anyway, the point is...
Why was it 12 for?
Because it's how much was 12 logim?
12, I don't know.
Right.
And you needed 12 logim for one
thing. That's the thing. Rav Shimon is arguing, why should they have had a hin measuring cup in the Beis Mikdash? There was only that one time ever in history that they needed the hin for something of the Mishkan, or the Beis Mikdash, and they didn't need it again. So why should they continue to have around a hin when it's not serving any function? Ella, rather, Rav Shimon says, instead of the hin, I'm going to substitute there with a different measurement that they had. Midi Yisera Shalogum Mechza Hayasham. There was an extra cup over there, besides the ones that Tanakhama mentioned, that held a log and a half. They used that to measure out the oil for the mincha, for the chavitim of the kohen gadol that was brought twice a day, where you had 3 logim of oil, and since it was split in half, you needed a logim echta, but both of the logim echta ben abayim, a log and a half in the morning, a log and a half in the afternoon. So according to Reb Shimon, they had a special measuring cup for that purpose to be able to measure out that 1.5 logim of oil. Whereas according to the chachamim, we'll see they were able to just use one of the other measuring cups instead. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Shalugumasta. They had an extra, instead of you, that I agree with 6 out of the ones that you, Tanakhama, said, that they had a half a hin, a third a hin, a quarter of a hin, etc. But the 7th one was they had a 1.5 lug measuring cup, says Rav Shimon. Okay. Something more.
So you should have 1.5 then, just to measure it.
Okay.
You have, if you have one log, you have a quarter, so you're always less than a log.
No, a quarter of a hen and a third of a hen. A quarter of a hen and a third of a hen and a half a hen are more than a log, because there are 12 logs in a hen. So those amounts are respectively 6, 4, and 3 logs. So those are much larger than a log. So according to the Tanakhama, you have 6, you had 12, 6, 4, 3, and then you had 1, and you had fractions of 1, a half and a quarter. According to Reb Shimon, you didn't have the 12. Instead, you had 6, 4, 3, 1 and a half, 1, a half, and a quarter. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Turn it up on it. We learn in a Braisa. Sheva midah shalach hayu b'mikdash. There were seven types of measuring cups for liquids in the b'mikdash. Revi'is log v'chafi log v'log. Revi'is ahen v'shlisha sahen v'chafi ahen v'hin. Give it Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda is giving the same list as in our Mishnah, but in reverse order. He's going from the smallest one, the quarter of a log, all the way up to the largest one, the hin, which is 12 logim. It's the same list, but backwards. We'll talk soon why he has it backwards. Rameyer says it in the order in our Mishnah. Hin v'chatsi ahin, shlisha sahin, revi'is ahin, v'log v'chatsi log, or revi'is log. So the same list as in our Mishnah and the same order. So the Gemara is going to discuss soon. Rameyer and Rabbi Huda are giving the same list. What's the difference which order you're listed in? We'll get to that in a few lines. But to finish the Braisa first, Rav Shimon Oim, Lahoyasham Hin, Rav Shimon says, like he says in our Mishnah, there was no hin measure there in the Beit HaMikdash, v'chimahoya hin meshamish, because after all, what would they have used the hin for if it was only used the one time to make the Shemen HaMishcha, and never again is it going to be necessary to make Shemen HaMishcha, then they don't need the hin. Et mi obitachtav, so, says Rav Shimon, which one am I going to put in instead to have seven? Because as the Gemara is going to talk about further down on the Amud, there was a Masorah of a Chachamim had that there were seven measuring cups in the Beis HaMikdash. So Rav Shimon agrees with that. So he says, if I'm taking out the hin, I have to have another one to make the number seven. But that would be Elamidi Yaseh, Shalugu Mechza HaYasham. So as he says in the Mishnah, there was an extra measuring cup of 1.5 lug, Shaboy HaYamodah B'chavit HaKoyin Gadol, that they would use to measure out the oil for the Chavit HaKoyin Gadol, Lugu Mechza B'boker, Lugu Mechza Ben HaBayim, a lug and a half in the morning and a lug and a half in the afternoon. Same as in our Mishnah.
It's a very important one.
Well, yeah, Reb Shimon takes out the 12 lug, which is the hin, and puts it instead 1.5. However, the Chachamim said to Reb Shimon, you don't need that. Chatsi log ha'isasham. After all, you had a half log measurement over there. The eshalashay b'chatsi log. So all you have to do is you fill up with the half a log 3 times, and there you have the oil that you need for the chavit ha'kohen gadol. Amalahem, so Reb Shimon says, by your logic, after divrechem, chatsi log v'log lo yase. By your logic, you shouldn't have to make a half a log, and you shouldn't have to make a whole log either. Revi'is ha'isasham, because after all, we both agree that there was a revi'is measurement over there. The eshalashay b'revi'is. Oh, yeah. Revi'is halug, which are like a revi'is. You need 4 revi'is, yeah. Or 2 for the things that you need a half a log, right. So according to your law, if you're going to say that you could just reuse the same keli many times, why do you need the half a log or the log? So the same way as you agree you need the half a log and the log, rather than measuring with the revi'is multiple times, I will say the same thing, says Reb Shimon, the same thing, you needed a 1.5, rather than measuring with a half a log 3 times. Okay. Ella, so Reb Shimon says, Ve'haklal ha'yu b'mikdash. No, the general rule in the Beis HaMikdash was as follows. Keli shemeshamesh midazu, a keli that is used to measure out one kind of thing, ein hameshamesh midacheres. You don't use it for a different measure. Instead, you have, instead of having the half a lug do double duty, which we're going to say in the next mission of what they did with the half a lug, instead of having to use that for that other purpose, as well as for the chavit ha'kohen gadol, they had a different one for each one. One idea is it goes back to this ein anius for makom hashir business that you're not going to act like in the Beis HaMikdash, but they can't afford extra tape.
If it was one of them half, the half you only use for that.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Tosfos points out that Rabbanan will still answer. The difference is that the Chachamim don't necessarily have to accept that basic principle. They will say like this. When it comes to the half a lug, they actually did use it for a number of different purposes, as we're going to see in the next Mishnah. Whereas when it comes, if you're going to tell me that they had a 1.5 lug, the only thing that would be needed for is the Chavit HaKohen Gadol, what's the point? Why bother making one specifically for the Chavit HaKohen Gadol just so you're not making another one do double duty? The Chachamim say there's no need to do that. In fact, actually, the Sfasemis point, you have a couple of other things about this also. The Sfasemis points out, first of all, the Chavit HaKohen Gadol essentially is a private mincha of the Kohen Gadol. So why should, so the Chachamim would say, why should we make a keli special to that? Let the Kohen Gadol bring a keli of his own, and they can use that.
Hey, the
Kohen Gadol. Fine, but yeah.
Yeah.
And there's also the idea back to actually, we're going to talk about on Omid Bey, that the Chavit HaKohen Gadol, we know you have 12 of them, and actually what comes out is you had a revi'it per challah. There's actually, I think, the Rambam, right, that they actually made them separately with one revi'it of oil per each one. So according to that then this whole discussion doesn't really come in anyway. You don't need a log and a half because you can just pour, you're just going to be pouring out individual revi'it in for the 12 challahs anyway. Okay.
So you need 12 revi'it.
Yeah, but again, when we say in our Mishnah that they had 7 measuring cups, we don't mean that they only had one of each. They had 100 of each. They had 1,000, however many they needed of each. But they, yeah, there's these 7 sizes.
Okay. The claim brought every day, half was the morning, half was...
Half was the morning, half the afternoon. That we know. You have a macholik of Rishonim. Doesn't mean that 6 of them, 6 whole challahs were offered in the morning and 6 in the afternoon. Or was it that, according to the Rambam, they broke each challah in half and offered 12 of the halves in the morning, 12 in the afternoon. Okay, and the Braisa finishes. So the next part is in parenthesis because it seems to be a quotation from the Mishnah, and the Gemara is not going to be discussing it until until later on. Therefore, they put it in parenthesis. But really, actually, what it is the end of the previous Braisa. The Rolazibur of Tzadik and the Shnosas Hayyubahim Kola. That Rolazibur of Tzadik says, like he says in the Mishnah, there weren't separate measuring cups for a half, a third, and a quarter of a hin for the nesachim. Instead, they had one big container that had markings in it, up to here for the power, up to here for the aisle, etc. Okay. The Gemara asks, now, again, we had at the beginning of the Gemara, at the beginning of the Braisa, we quoted where Rabbi Yehuda lists the 7 midas in going from smallest to the largest, and Rabbi Meir goes from the largest to the smallest. But they both have the same list. It's only Rabbi Shimon disagree as Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Tzadik disagree on the actual list. So the question is, my ikka ben Rabbi Meir or Rabbi Yehuda? So what is the actual argument between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda? Amar Rabbi Yehonan, Beirutse midas ikka benayim. The argument between them is as far as the Beirutse midas. What are Beirutsim? They have a few possibilities. Rashi Ksaviad explains that when, like this, when you fill up a container, like think of, for example, you fill up a Kiddush cup, then it does, the liquid doesn't go exactly until the top of the rim. It goes a little bit above it because of surface tension. That extra part is called birutin. That's when you fill up a Kiddush cup. It bellies up a little. It's like the heat for grains or whatever. Yeah. So therefore, that part is called birutin. So Rashi describes, if you were to take a small keli and fill it up, and you have birutin like that, if you immediately pour it into a larger container, then you'll get the birutin as well. But if you wait, then it'll spill over the sides, and then it won't be bellying over. Like when you fill up a kiddush cup, if you right away pick it up and make kiddush, then good. If you leave it there, then after a while somebody jiggles the table, and then it starts spilling over the sides. Yeah.
Even when you pick it up,
there's that also. Yeah. If your hands are steady, depends on steady your hands are. Whatever. Okay. Anyway, the point is Rashi. That's what birutin are. Miyocha Tzadashi on the top gives a slightly different explanation of Birutim. Birutim, according to him, means the actual parts that spill over the sides. In other words, they were poured onto the container, and then they spilled over the sides. There was too much for surface tension.
Birutim is
above the rim, and according to the other, is the part that actually spilled out.
What did they do about the spilled over?
One second. And then Rabbeinu Gershom brings a third explanation that Birutim means the foam on top. Like sometimes also you have your pour from a container into another one, into a kiddush cup or whatever, you get foam on. Anyway, so Lamanda Amami Masa Lamaila, so now you have like Rav Yehuda, who lists the containers from the smallest to the largest, according to him, Kasava Birutim Hamidis Niskanshu. He holds that the Birutim do have Kedusha as well. So therefore, he says like this, Urviyas Yohiv Le Rahman Ala Moshe. So in other words, he says the basic measure that Hashem started by giving to Moshe is the Urviyas. But Amalei, and Hashem tells him, make a Urviyas, Shire, to Ka'ayu Lehu Birutin. As you're making the larger ones, as you're making the larger containers, which are multiples of a Urviyas, make sure that they're large enough to contain the Birutin as well. In other words, if let's say, for example, according to Rabbi Avraham Chaim Noah, let's say a revius is 3 ounces. That's the minimum you need for kiddush, according to Rabbi Avraham Chaim Noah. But let's say with the big, let's say just over three ounces and 16 grains, it says in Loch HaLachabad, whatever. Anyway, let's say with the birutim, it would be, let's say, for example, 3.1 ounces. So then the idea is you need to make, so then the idea is you need to make the next larger size container. Instead of making it, let's say, exactly 6 ounces to be a half a lug, you have to make it a little bit larger. You have to make it at least 6.1 to be able to fit the viruthin of the revia in order to fit two, or actually 6.2 to fit two reviathin plus the viruthin plus the part above the rim. And similarly with the other one. So each one is not exactly twice or three times or whatever it is the previous one, but rather slightly larger to include the viruthin as well.
Because every time you
have to add the viruthin, and therefore, and you have to include that. So therefore, Rabbi Huda, putting it that way, is saying that you should do it like that. You need to be able to have enough room to hold the actual reviath plus the viruthin.
That's why he's going from the
lowest to from the smallest to the largest. Because in other words, Hashem is telling Moshe, start with the reviath, make it that there will be the size of a reviath plus viruthin, make the half a lug, which is two reviathin, enough to hold two reviathin plus the viruthin. Make the lug enough to hold two half lugim plus the viruthin and so forth. So each time it's slightly more than double as much. Yeah.
The cup is also bigger.
That's Rabbi Huda. Well, right. So in other words, it'll hold more, obviously. But the point is, each one, the viruthin are going to be a larger amount. Well, lesser. Well, it's going to be an equal height, but it'll be, I guess, as long as each container is proportional, like, as far as height and width, then the viruthin will be proportionally the same amount of the liquid. But whatever. The point is, yeah. Okay. So that's Rabbi Huda. Lamanda Omami, Milo Lamasa, whereas according to the mayor who lists them in the other way around, from the largest to the smallest, the other way around, when you pour from a larger container into the smaller one, you're not going to get viruthin because you're not even going to get everything that was in the original one. You're going to get half of it into one and half into the other. Therefore, the reason he lists them in that order is Kasava, viruthin midis loinis kachu. So these viruthin do not have kedusha. Therefore, in other words, v'hin yohev le'rachmana l'Moshe. So the other way around, Hashem started by telling Moshe, make a hin measure, and then based on that, you're going to make the smaller measurements as being, you're going to make the smaller ones as being fractions of that. So make a hin where it'll fit exactly a hin, never mind the birutin. Then he tells him, when you make the next one, for example, a half a hin, make it that it'll hold exactly a half a hin. Don't worry about the birutim, because the birutim aren't going to have kedusha, and so forth. So according to the mayor, each one is going to be exactly half or a third or whatever it is, the size of the priest.
The one doesn't have birutim.
Well, it does. In other words, it can have viruthin on top of it, but those viruthin are not going to be kaddish. Only the hin that fits inside that hidden, only the exact hin that fits inside that hidden container. Let's say if we say that a hin is a gallon, so you know it's going to be exactly a gallon, not a gallon plus 1 ounce. Let's say so the same thing. The next one is going to be exactly half a gallon, not half a gallon plus half an ounce, etc.
According to Rabbi Yehuda,
viruthin damid is kaddish.
Ask him if it's kaddish or not.
The difference is, are they?
What would be the difference?
Well,
The
question is, or do they have the kedusha that they have from the keli? Where now, for example, you're going to have to use them that day, otherwise they become possible by lina. So according to the Yehudet has kedusha, according to the may or not. Although, actually, Tosfos points out that we're actually going to have a sugya later on Daf Tzadik about the issue of Moisa Nesachim, and the Gemara is going to discuss there what Moisa Nesachim is, and one possibility is that it means these Beruthimidis. So in that case, then, and they go for Kais and Azeach, meaning that you can be Poydia then. So therefore, that would be part of the idea. In other words, if they don't have the Kedusha of being in a Kli Shoreis, they only have Kedusha's Damim, fine, you can be Poydia to them like anything that has Kedusha's Damim. If they have Kedusha's Aguf, you can't necessarily do that, because once they have Kedusha's Aguf, only animals that have Kedusha's Aguf can be Poydia to nothing else.
You can't have to drink it or you
don't. No, well then it would have to be used as for the Nesachim, well yeah. Tosfos says it's not really, because later on when we discuss Moshe Nesachim, we don't have these particular opinions discussed in that connection. So therefore Tosfos says that there might be a difference between the Nesachim of the Yochid versus the Tzibur, because when it comes to the Tzibur, you have the concept lay based in Masna Lehem, that based in will have in mind that the Birusim should or shouldn't have Kedusha. Not necessarily for the Yochid, right?
First, it goes to the Kali, then it spills over.
Well, no, the point is, let's say, for example, you're spilling wine. Well, no, but that's the point. When you're spilling wine, when you're pouring wine into the container, you reach the top surface of the Kali, then you're still pouring in a little more, and you have that belly on top. That part was never inside the actual Kali. That's the point. That was never within as being held up by it. Yeah. Okay. With that, with all that said, Tosfos says another way you can explain the Gemara over here is we're not even talking about should the Beirutsim go into the next larger size keli or not. What we mean is, Tosfos says, another possibility is that we're just using the larger of the smaller or smaller of a larger as a siman. When you're pouring, it'll help you remember, when you're pouring from a smaller to a larger container in general in day-to-day use, you get the Beirutsim in there also, whereas the other way around you don't. So therefore, it can also be that we're both, in other words, it might be both Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda agree that the half a hin, for example, is exactly half a hin, not half a hin and a little bit more, or for example, the revius is the revius, and the half a log, which is twice that, is exactly twice that, not 2.1 times it or whatever. The only argument would be, as far as the Beirutsim, and going from smaller to larger, or larger to smaller, helps you remember which one says which. That's how choice influences another way.
Saying if you do it one way, you will have Beirutsim, and if you don't,
no, in other words, the idea, no. What we're saying is like this. Again, according to Rashi's explanation, what it actually means is, again, for example, going from the Revius to the half a lug, which is twice as much, it's not actually twice as much, it's a little bit more than twice as much, because you have to allow for the Beirutsim, whereas the mayor is not doing that. The mayor would say that the Revius is exactly half of the half, of the half. Right, that's all according to Rashi. According to Tosfos, they both agree that the Revius is exactly half of the half a log, and the half a log is exactly half of the log, etc. Either way, the machlokas between them is just we're using the listing from top from smallest to largest, or from smallest to largest, helps us remember which one says the Beirutsim HaKodesh and which one is not. Rabbi Yehuda, who lists them from the bottom to the top, from the smallest to the largest, is the one who says the Beirutsim HaKodesh, and you can remember it because you know in day-to-day use, when you're pouring from a smaller to a larger container, you'll get the Beirutsim as well. Whereas the mayor would disagree with that concept. But they would both agree that the kalim are exact fractions or exact multiples of each other, not like Rashi. That's our choice. Okay. Abaya says you don't have to understand the machlokas that way. The kula alma beirutsim mid is ikalameim miskadshu veikalameim loin miskadshu. No, the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir doesn't necessarily have to do with beirutsim. There could be a separate machlokas on that subject, whether the beirutsim are kodesh or not, which again, when we get to Moshe B'Sachim, we'll talk about that. V'hacha b'mulayim kamisti. The machlokas between them is, how do we know that clay shoreis are mekadesh only when they're full, because you have the psukim by the Korbanos and Nesim, Mizrach Echad, Taras, Kestaf Echad, Mizrach Echad, Shneim Meleim. From that word Meleim, we learn that they're Mekadosh when they're full. So therefore, what does that mean when they're full? Manda, Omer Milamai, Lamata, Rav Meir, who lists them from the largest to the smallest, Kasavar, he holds, meaning Meleim, Shaloy Yechastav, Shaloy Yosef. It means they have to be exactly as full as they're supposed to be. The hin has to hold exactly a hin, no more, no less. The half a hin has to hold exactly a half a hin, no more, no less. Umanda Omam, Masalamila, whereas Rabbi Yehuda, who lists them from the smallest to the largest, he holds Malayim, which means Shalom Yechzar. It means it shouldn't have any less than it's supposed to in it. Abo Yoser, but if it has a little bit extra, if it has the part sticking up on top, the Birutim, then in the Malayim Karinabe, we can still call it that it's Malayim, we can still call that it's Makadish its content. If you fill it one way. If you're going to get a mayor, it would mean, for example, the half a hin for the nesachim of a par has to hold exactly a half a hin, no more, no less. If you put in even a drop more, then it bellies out on top. Well, not a drop more, whatever, enough that it bellies out on top, then no good. It's not Makadish, it's content. We may not even be arguing about the question about the Beirutsim. We may be arguing, can the Keli be Mekadesh when it's over full, or only when it's exactly full?
Yeah. Isn't it literally impossible?
No, because the difference it's is... Maybe it's not Mekadesh unless it's exactly full, no more, no less. Yeah.
None of it would be
right. But because not the way. because not malayim, so therefore you have to be exact. You have to measure it out exactly.
Yeah, it is, but
yeah, but it's over malayim.
Yeah, but sometimes there's a drop or two more.
No. The Torah only expects you to go, like we said yesterday, the Torah only expects you to go according to what you can see with the naked eye.
Oh,
if with the naked eye it looks even, then yeah, if to the naked eye it looks like it's bellying out, that's when Rameya would say you'd have a problem.
So one side of the discussion, we only talked about the Birutin.
Right, and now Abaye is saying it's talking about the whole thing.
The
right.
Whole content is the same.
Right.
The kind of doing it, and it's too much, you can take off a drop and then it's good, or...
Lachura, yeah, I don't know. If you put in too much, no. So then, yeah, maybe you can measure, maybe you can level off the top of it, and the rest will be Kodesh, yeah. Abaye is saying never mind the Birutin issue. We're not even getting
it. It's
in the second verse, we're talking about the second version, right. Fine. So that takes care of Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. So we understand their machloifes is either about whether the Birutim are Kodesh, or whether the Birutim are Kodesh, or what does Malayim mean? Does it mean exactly full, or does it mean a little, or does it mean they can be a little bit over full? And you also have the machloifes between Rashi and Tosfos. Are we talking about, in other words, that the kalim are not exact multiples of each other, or do they have to be exact multiples of each other to be able to hold the extra amount of birutim?
Those days it was very hard to make a kalim, exactly like we can make it now, with this now I have machinery.
Well, there is that, but on the other hand, for example, you have the Rashi the near the end of Parashat Nasa, when it summarizes the korbanos of all the Nasiim, does the math over there, how much all of their silver kalim weighed and so forth, and we don't need that, we can do the math ourselves. But Rashi explains, but what it means is that the kalim of the Beis Mikdash were made, these kalim of the Nasiim made, were made very exactly like that. Each one, you'd weigh them individually, you'd weigh them all 12 in the aggregate, and you had, it was an exact multiple, because they made them very precisely. If you had the Salo, you had the other Chachmei Lev and whatever made them, so they knew what they were doing. Then he said in the Braith that Rav Shimon Omer Lohoy Shamkin, in Mishnah actually we also said, that Rav Shimon said there was no Hin because they only needed it one time for the Shemana Mishnah. So therefore he says there's no reason to have a Hin in later generations.
The first one,
the 12 Lurim one. You only needed it one time when Moshe made the Shemana Mishnah in the Midrash. After that they never had anything again in the Mishnah question they needed a Hin for. So therefore the Meir says, Rav Shimon rather says, what's the point of having a Hin measurement? So the question is, Shaper Kamal of Rav Shimon Rabbanan. Rav Shimon has a good point. Tackle what are the Chachamim saying? Why did they have the Hin? The answer is Rabbanan. So what would the Rabbanan say? They would say, look, have a Hin to Ovid Moshe L'Shem and Mishra. The fact is, they had the Hin that Moshe originally made for the Shem and Mishra, and that you needed a Hin measure, the Shem and Zayit Hin, because it's all success. You should take a Hin of all of them. Therefore, so the machlokas is like this, mar savar, so therefore, Rav Shimon holds, kivin de l'dordas lo'yhav etzorah, since they didn't need such a thing for future generations, l'fishahu da'avde, so Moshe made it as a one-time thing, the ignaz, and after that it was put in gniza, and they never had it in the Beis Mikdash again, because they weren't going to use it. The idach, where the chachamim would answer to that, no, kivin, that's Rav Shimon. The idach, whereas the others, the chachamim, would answer, no, kivin to hava. Yes, but once you had it at the beginning, they kept it. So maybe they kept it. They never used it, but nevertheless, it existed in the Beis Mikdash, and it existed in the Beis Mikdash, and therefore you can still say that there were seven types of measuring cups in the Beis Mikdash. Okay. So,
are we talking about the first and the second temple?
Mavashis, I don't know.
Well, everybody measured the other cups. The other ones they did make.
Yeah, I mean, they're Moshe made original ones for the Mishkan, but then they had to make, whenever they had to make new ones, they made new ones, yeah. Okay, fine. Then we said, Amamai, we said in the Braita that Rav Shimon says, that Rav Shimon says, if I hold there was no Hin in the Beis Mikdash, then what do they have instead of it? The question is, so why is it Dafka necessary to put in something else? Let Rav Shimon say, there will only six types of measuring cups. The answer is, Kidomer Ravina, similar to what Ravina says, which we learned earlier, in the Masechta, and we're going to discuss in more detail in the next parak. Gmiri shteis smichas tzibur. We have the Kabbalah that there are only two korbanos. Actually, it's in our parak, but we have a Kabbalah that there are only two korbanos tzibur where smicha is done, namely the par helam davar shel tzibur and the third amishtalei achanim kippur. only those two. There, so the same way as we have a Kabbalah like that, but there's only those two, and therefore any other carbon sibur that we would think needs smicha doesn't. Well, the same way, Hachanami Gmiri, the Sheva Midas Shalacho, the same way here, we have the Kabbalah that there were seven, that there were exactly seven types of measuring cups, and therefore Reb Shimon agrees with that, and therefore Reb Shimon would say, so if I'm taking out the hint, then I have to put another one in there instead, otherwise we're missing. When we say we have Gmiri, by the way, sometimes in the Gemara, Gmiri means, Halakha L'Moshe Mishinai. However, over here, it's in the Chavis Yor, actually has in one of his Shuvahs, goes through all the places in Shas, so one by one, the Goyenish thing, goes through over there, all the places in Shas where we stand something Gmiri, or Be'emes Omru, which is also an expression that the Gemara sometimes uses, on Halakha L'Moshe Mishinai and whatever, and he goes through each one of them and discusses briefly, is this really Halakha L'Moshe Mishinai or not? For this one, he says, actually, not necessarily does it have to be that it's literally Halakha L'Moshe Mishinai. It may just mean that it was a strong Kabbalah that they had from the Rebbeim going back many generations, but not necessarily all the way back to Moshe and Sinai.
Like not knowing exactly what was and wasn't Moshe and Sinai?
Well, the Rambam writes as a basic rule that the Chachamim can't argue on a halachah Moshe and Sinai. Now, since the next piece of Gemara over here is going to mention that maybe Rav Elazar Rav Tzadik disagrees with this concept of seven measuring cups, that would be a reason to say it's not halachah Moshe and Sinai. Because if it was, then Rav Elazar Tzadik couldn't argue with it. But you do have sometimes, for a practice, actually we're going to have an example tomorrow in the Gemara, actually, whether a certain din is halachah L'Moshe Mishinai or whether we learn it from a pulpit. But you have other examples also. You have Nisuch HaMayim, for example, the Gemara discusses in some places, is it halachah L'Moshe Mishinai, or is it that we learn it from the extra mem and yod and mem in the Nisachim of Sufis? Yeah, we've learned it. We've come across it here and there, yeah. Then we said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik and Shnas the Toyvim. We said Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik had said that instead of having different measuring cups for 6, 4, and 3 lugim, a third, a half, and a quarter of a hin, instead of those, they had one big container where they had markings in it.
Shnas
means markings. Like, again, after you look in the diagram and Rashi on the previous article. Okay, so the question is, let's let Sheva Midas. Does Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik not hold of this thing we just said that there were seven measuring cups? And says, okay, let's lay. One possibility is, yeah, maybe he disagrees with it. Which is again why the Chavis Yoy would say it's evidently not a real halacha L'Moshe Mishinai. The Iboy Seima, or another answer, you could say, my Sheva Midas, that Rav Elazar ben Tzadik would agree on the concept of Sheva Midas, but he would understand it doesn't mean Sheva Midas as in seven different measuring cups, but rather Sheva Medidas, seven types of measurements that you could make using the one keli, because you have markings in it up to here for 6, up to here for 4, up to here for 3, up to here for a half, etc. That's like a measuring cup.
So how many was there?
So according to him, there would only have been one. So one possibility is that according to him there was only one. That's how Rashi learns. Tosca says that actually Rav Elazar ben Tzadik would say that there were four. You had the half hin, third of a hin and a quarter of a hin, 6, 4, and 3 logim respectively. And then you had a fourth one which contained one lug, and within that you had markings for a quarter and a half. You didn't have seven different containers. You had 6, 4, 3, and 1. And within the one, you had measurements, so you had lines in it to be able to measure a half or a quarter. That's our choice.
3 and 1.
6, 4, 3, and 1, and then within the one, you have three possible measurements that you can do.
Yeah, it's still four.
That's 4 kalim altogether. That's the choice just brings from Tessessa like that. That's true. Clay shards can be made out of glass. They have to be made out of metal. That's true. They have to be very careful. Fine, so the Mishnah says, let's go through what each of these things was used for. Revius Mahos and Meshameshes, what did they use the Revius for?
Can
I start last one? Yes, Shavim Medidas, it means seven types of measurements. So Revius Mahos and Meshameshes, what did they use the Revius for? Well, like this, there were two things. Revius Mayim on Masora, number one for Masora, the first stage of a Tara, let's describe the beginning of Parashat Masora, is you need water and you have two birds and eight eres and azoiv and whatever. So you take one of the birds and you sheft it over a container of water, and that container has to contain. No, they actually sheft the bird, the shachat of the tiparachas. This is not a carbon. This doesn't take place in the Beit Mikdash. This actually takes place, we're going to discuss on the base, where exactly. They shechted one bird. They the blood went into the water. Then they took the live bird and the other thing, the piece of cedar, the azo, whatever, and they dipped them into the mixture of water and blood. sprinkled on the masechta seven times, and then took the live bird and sent it away to fly away. That's the first stage of the masechta tara, and then after that you have the various other stages that are described in the continuation of the parasha.
When
malika is done for a korban in the bais mikdash, a chatas ha'ofer and oil. This is not a korban.
So
the bird was never shechted
inside
the bais mikdash. Right. Only the turgot. Right. Okay. So you have sort of a bias of water for the masechta, for the first stage of the masechta tara. Choice to point out actually that there's actually a mishnah in the Goyim that says that it should be a half a log. So either it means that mishnah disagrees with our that the tana of that mishnah disagrees with our mishnah, or maybe you need to be magia that mishnah to say a quarter log like it says it is. So that's for the masechta, or revius shemen l'nazir. Also, you need the revius measurement. You use it to measure out a revius of oil for the nazir's bread that comes with his carbonus. We learned previously that he brings 20 loaves of bread, 10 each of two types of masa, with his carbonus, and altogether they mix in a revius of oil into the loaves when they're made. Or actually one kind they mix it in, the other kind they smear it on top, a half a revius for one, a half a revius for the other, whatever. They need a total of a revius of oil, so they measure it out using the revius container.
Revius mine
and revius shemen. And that's it. Chatzil log mahayim shamish, what do they use the half log container for? That was chatzil, also two purposes. Chatzil log mayim l'soy. So number one, they used it to fill up a half a log of water to give the soyser her drink that they dissolve the scroll into. And also a half a log of oil for the toida, because the toida you had 40 loaves, and there we said you had the chametz ones didn't have oil in them at all. The three types of masa had oil in them. One type, the revucha, had twice as much as the other two. So you had out of that half a log, you had a revius went to the revucha, an eighth went to the chalas, an eighth went to the rechitin. So therefore, you need to measure a half a cup of oil. So they use a half a log. So they use the half log measuring cup for that. Tosfos mentions also, by the way, as far as the soita, that there may be a machlokus whether you need a half or a quarter of a log for her. And one interesting explanation is actually the Mishnah in soita mentions the machlokus tanoim. How much do they actually write of the words of the parashas soita over there? Do they write they have Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim disagree, so therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that you have less to write, maybe according to him, you need less water to dissolve it into. Whereas according to the Chachamim, that you're writing more than
oil
that has nothing to do with the soita. Oil is to go into the dough for these last meat soita. Okay.
So that's if she makes it through.
No. It's two separate things. They used it for the soita. They also used it whenever a person is bringing a soita.
Oh.
It's two unrelated.
And then
separately, chetzi log for the toita. Yeah.
What would
the
chetzi log use for
the toita? If a soja comes and needs the whole procedure, which needs to drink soja water, they need to give, they have to fill up. They have to fill up a container of water from the kier and dissolve
it. It wasn't
oil. No, it wasn't oil. It was water. No, it was measuring cup. Okay. Next, number three, of a log hoya mojit b'chala menachos, the third container, the log they use to measure out the oil for all the menachos, because every mincha has to have a log of oil. And a filo mincha shal samach yisroin. So even if a person is bringing a mincha of 60 yisroinim, which we're going to learn later on in the masechta, that person can do that. That 60 is the maximum. No samach samach log, then he has to pour in 60 log of oil. On the other hand, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Reimer, no, a filo mincha shal samach yisroin ein la el loga. No, even if the mincha is 60 yisroin, you only have one log of oil. Shenem la mincha v'loy shomim, because you have a positive. That mentions four mincha and a log of oil. The context is about the mincha that a poor mitzvah brings. But still, since the pasuk puts together mincha and log shomen, so he learns that it means that a mincha always has a log, no more, no less. Okay. Next, we have the other container. So far, we've taken care of four of the containers. We'll see in the Gemara why they disagree. But so far we've taken care of the revius, the half, the log. So now let's deal with the rest of them. The hin we already dealt with is used for the shemen amishah. We have three left. Shisha lapar, the one that held six lugim, which is a half a hin, that was used for the nesachim of a par. You need a half a hin of oil and a half a hin of wine. For most korbanos of parim, you need it for an oila shlamim, a soida. Except you don't need it for a chatas or an asham. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. But a bala ayil, if you bring an ayil, then you need a third of a hin, which is four logim. Ushloish ala keves, and la keves, and three for a keves. Three for the keves, which is a quarter of a hin. And the Mishnah finishes off, by the way, Shlosho Mechtel Menorah. Here's another thing they had to measure in the Beit Hamikdash. Every day they needed 3.5 log of oil. Chatzi log, l'chol ner. They used a half a log for each lamp of the menorah. And since there are 7 lamps, a half a log times 7 equals 3.5. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. A half a log for... Well, if you figure a log is about a pint...
How much is a log?
A log is about a pint, give or take. If one's about a pint, no, it's a bit less, like 12 ounces. Okay, half a log is 6 ounces. 6 ounces, let's say, if one's about a pint now. Yeah, it's a large amount, but it has to burn, because it has to burn throughout the night. We're going to discuss something about it.
Well, you can burn throughout the night, but you don't need necessarily a half a pint of
water. Yeah, but
they have big candles?
Yeah, they have that thick wick. We're going to talk about it. Hold on. Okay. Thing more social. Yossi Rebbe the Kokashalai. Rebbe was sitting and wondering about what it says in our Mishnah. The question is, we said that there were these 7 measuring cups, and we mentioned the first one was the Revius, that we used it for the Masorah's water and for the Nazir's oil. The question is, Revius Loma Nimshcha. The question Rebbe had is, why did it have to be anointed to be used as a Kli Sharis? What is there that you're putting into it that needs to have Kedushas Aguf? E Masorah, if you're talking about you need it to be Nimsha in order to put in it the water from Masorah, definitely not. Chutzu, what takes place with this part of the Masorah's Tara, with the two birds and everything, takes place outside of the Mesesh. So why should you need a Kli Sharis for it?
It's outside of the
Mesesh. So Rashi Ksavyad just says Lichot Lamasma. Interesting, Miyuchas Rashi and also Rabbeinu Gershom says that it was done in Shaar Nikanor, which leads to a lot of discussion among the Achronim. Why on no, Shaar Nikanor is by the edge of the Azara. Fine, so he's standing outside Shaar Nikanor, let's say. But why on earth should you have to do it over there? It seems from the Pesukim that you're doing it outside the city. So you have a lot of discussion about it. Maybe indeed your Shalayim, one possibility that's brought up is maybe your Shalayim didn't have the Kedusha of Orei Choyma as far as Masorah staying out of it, because Orei Choyma would only be other walled cities in Eretz Yisrael. You have a couple of arguments about it, but also Rabbi Yaakov Emden has a tshuva where somebody asked him about this, and he says apparently what it is that they just said, when they said Shaar Nikanor, Miyuchas Rashi and Rabbeinu Gershom, when they said Shaar Nikanor, they were talking loosely. They just meant outside the Azara. Like Shaar Nikanor is the beginning of the area outside the Azara, but really they would mean that it was done outside the city.
What about the gate that the Nikanor?
Yeah, it's the famous gate that Nikanor.
That's the beginning of the Azara.
No, it's not the beginning of the Azara. No, it's the gate for the Azara. So again, returning to the Gemara. So if you don't need to be Moshiach the Revius to use it for the Masorah, because that's anyway outside the Azara, the E Nazir, and if you're using it for the oil for the Nazir's bread, what do you mean? Lachem Nazir, the Shechitas Ayel, or the Kaddish. When does that bread get Kedushas Aguf? We've learned previously, only when the ram itself, the Shlomim, is shechted, only then does the bread get Kedushas Aguf. So we don't need to measure out the oil with a Kli Sharis in order to make it Kaddish. So why should we need the Revius to be a Kli Sharis if it's only used for those purposes?
It only gets Kli Sharis once you have...
Once you put in a Kli Sharis. Once you shech the carbon, right. Why should you need a Kli Sharis for the oil, which is by the time you get to shechting the carbon, the bread has already been baked. You don't need the oil at that point anymore. You bake the bread. You put in the oil into the dough. You've smeared it on the, or you've smeared it on the rechitin, as the case may be. The container is empty now. You don't need to be Mekadosh anything. And beforehand, you don't need to be Mekadosh because they don't
have... that wasn't done in the Kedushas?
The making of the bread of the Nazir doesn't have to be, because they can be in the end anywhere in Yerushalayim. And they could be baked anywhere in Yerushalayim, yeah.
Once you have the bread was baked for the Nazir, then...
Only then you shech the carbon, and only when you shech the carbon does the bread get its Kedushas Aguf. So what do you need? A Revius that has that's the charge. Amalei Rav Chiya, so Rav Chiya answers, the Shabbahu Yamodah B'chavitah Kohen Gadol, Revius Shemim B'chavitah B'chala. The answer is they used it for measuring out the oil for the B'chavitah Kohen Gadol. One Revius per Chala. Because again, we said before you had 3 lugim altogether. That 3 lugim was split in half to make a 1.5 in the morning, 1.5 in the afternoon. But each of those 1.5 lugim was then split into 12 parts for the 12 halas. You wind up with a revius per halah. To be exact, sorry. What it is you start out with 3 lugim contain 12 revius. You're making 12 chalas out of them, and you're offering half of the chalas in the morning and half in the afternoon. You end up with a revius of oil per chalas, and you have to measure it out individually. Kari Yaleh. So Rebbe was very impressed with that answer. Kari Yaleh, he said on him, the Pasuk, Me'eret merchak ish asasi, the one who was able to give me advice came from far away. Rebbe Chia came from Bavel and moved to Eretz Yisrael. So like Rebbe is saying, Hashem made it. You came all the way from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael just to clarify this for me.
The answer is
because they need it for the Chavit HaKohen Gadol, and those are made inside the Azara. There, the oil needs that Kedusha Zagur, because the Chavit HaKohen Gadol have their Kedusha already before they're offered. Yeah.
And the Chavit
HaKohen Gadol. And then they needed a revius container for each one to measure out the oil for each of the 12 chalas.
So it was used
for the Nazir, it was used for the Masada. However, that wasn't the purpose for which they needed to make it a Kli Sharis. Yeah. The purpose they needed to make it a Kli Sharis was for the Kohen Gadol's Chavit. And by the way, before Shem asked, in that case, why isn't this listed in the Mishnah? And one answer is because the Mishnah was already formulated as it is by the time Yebi came up with this question. So he didn't want to change the wording. Remember, the Mishnah was still Baal Peh. So he didn't want to change the wording in order not to confuse people, so therefore there was just less than the Gemara. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Chatsi log mahayim mishamish. Then we said in the Mishnah that in the next thing, the half log measurement, what was it used for? And we said it was used for the oil for the nazir, for the oil for the lachmei toda, and the water for the mei toda. So again, you have a similar question. Yosef Rebbe the Kakashale. Rebbe again was sitting and wondering the same thing. Chatsi log lama nimshach. Why do they need to be Mashiach the half log either? E soita, if it was for the sake of the water of the soita, you don't need it. After all, is the water already cholin that you need it to have kedusha like, well, where did it come from? My kedushin. The prophet says the holy water, it came from the kier. The kier is a kli shavit. So you should be just once it was in the kier, it already had kedusha like, well. Yeah. You don't need to put in another keli to make. Now, Tosfos points out that actually, there was a Tosfos in the first parak that talked about an idea. Once you have something that was in a kli sharis, you're not going to put it afterwards in a kli chol, which also explains why we needed that revius shemen for the kohen gadol, why it needed to be nimshach. It's not so much that the chavit kohen gadol were made in the azara. The chavit kohen gadol only really get their kedushas like once they're baked. But once you have the oil in the three lug thing to measure it out, or in the half, in the one and a half load, the coin of Shimon, you're not going to put it in a free coil, so Tosfos asks, in that case, shouldn't you say the same thing over here? The answer is Tosfos says it's one thing when something goes on the Mizbeach, you don't want to do that. Take it from a free shard, put it in a free coil. The water for the soldier doesn't go on the Mizbeach, she drinks it. Therefore, it wouldn't matter if you put it in a free coil. Yeah, but it wouldn't matter, therefore, and in fact, the Rashash points out, the Pasuk actually says that you put it, Mayim Kedoshim Bikli Cheres. You put it in an earthenware container. An earthenware container cannot be a kli sharis. Everybody agrees to that.
It has to be metal.
Well, according to Chachamim, which is the halacha, it has to be metal. According to Rabbi Yossi Ben Yehuda, it can be wood or bone or whatever, but definitely not cheres. So therefore, yeah. So because cheres is very cheap and very low grade. Okay. So again, cheres is a kabbal tumah. If you need it for the soter, then it's already in the kier. It had kedusha zaguf once it was in the kier, and there shouldn't be a problem putting it in a kli chol afterwards. It's not going on the mizbeach anyway. E toda, and if you're saying you needed to anoint it and make it a kli sharis in order to measure out the oil for the toda, again lachmei toda b'shita toda hudakadshi. Again, like the lechem of the nazir, the lechem of the toda only gets its kedusha zaguf when the korban is shechted, and by that time the loaves are already been baked and mixed in, the oil has been mixed in and smeared and whatever. So again, you shouldn't need it to be a kli sharis. Amalei Rav Shimon ben Rebbe, said Rav Shimon, the son of Rebbe, answers him, they needed the half a lug, Shaboy hoy machalit, chapsi lug shemen machol ner v'net, because they would use that to put we learned at the end of our Mishnah, that they needed a half a lug of oil for each lamp of the menorah, so therefore that's what they use, the half a lug for on a daily basis, is to measure out the oil for each lamp of the menorah.
So then
you're three and a half altogether, but they use seven copies of that half a lug measuring cup, or they filled it up seven times, or eight times. Yeah. So therefore, yeah. Amalai, so Rebbe was very impressed, because Ner Yisrael, because he didn't realize this, and his son pointed that. So Ner Yisrael, Kachoya, light of Yisrael, He's praising him, giving him a compliment. Light of Yisrael, especially because, no, not Rapia, Shimon Bar Devi this time. He's saying, you're the light of Yisrael, especially because he enlightened him as far as something of the light of the Minerva. Kahoya, that's exactly how it was. That's what they needed the half a loaf for, and that's why it had to be a cliche so that they could use it to measure out the oil for the Minerva. Okay. So now let's talk about the lighting of the Minerva. Omer of Yechanan Omer Rebbe. Ner Shekovsa. If a lamp of the menorah goes out, and we're talking about, in other words, the simple meaning is Miyuchas Rashi says, for example, if it went out in the middle of the night or any time before the morning, and the problem is Nidashin Hashem and Nidashin Hapsila, the problem now that you have is that the oil now is okay, so Miyuchas Rashi explains what it means as like, the oil itself, you can't reuse that oil because it's already, it's like leftovers at that point. So it's not for cover dick to reuse it for lighting the menorah the next day. So the point, one second. So like this, we're talking about within that same night. Sorry, it has to burn all through the night. So if you find in the middle of the night that it went out, the problem is you can't reuse that oil because not the cover dick. The wick itself, nidashna hasila, or if the wick itself went out, again, you can't do anything with it. It's effectively ashes now. You can't really, it's not really in a condition to be able to relight it. Rashi Ksaviyav explains differently that nidashin Hashem means if the oil is actually full of ashes. In other words, we're not talking about the oil is not necessarily possible just for the fact that it's left over, but if it actually got full of ashes, then practically speaking, you can't use it again. So then what do you do? So what you do is like this. You clean out that particular lamp of the menorah. You take everything that's in it, the remaining oil and the remaining wick and the ashes and whatever. You clean it out. That's the Hatovah Tameir. The Noit Bashemin, you refill it with oil. And then you relight it.
And you relight it at night?
Yes, but the menorah is supposed to be lit at night. We're actually going to talk about that later. Usually the menorah is lit Me'erev Ad Boker. It's supposed to burn throughout the night from evening until morning. So we're going to look. We're going to talk about later on what this. But like this, you're allowed to relight it during the night. With that said, actually, the Rashba has in one of his Chuvot where he argues we're not talking about the other lamps for the menorah in general. If those go out during the night, it's no big deal. He says specifically we're talking about over here about Ner Marov, the one lamp that was supposed to burn throughout the whole night, which we talked about the other day. That a nest would happen, it would burn throughout the whole night, even though it had the same amount of oil as the other one, or even in the times of Shimon HaTzadik and other Kohen and Golem who were Tzadikim, it would burn throughout the whole day as well. So that one, he says, we're talking about specifically, if you found in the middle of the night that it went out, then you would have to clean it out and relight it, because that one specifically is supposed to stay.
Which one we're talking about?
Well, there's a machloek that's also which one is in there, my rock.
We just spoke about that each one held so much.
Yeah.
It should last all night.
You bring up a very good point, which actually the famous Rishima from the Rebbe, Rishima Samanoda. We're going to be referring to a number of times over the next week and a half as the Shem when we talk about different details involving the Minota. So there's a long Rishima the Rebbe wrote in Tokrish Sadik Test in Paris, a long, long thing that discusses all the halachos about the Minota and all the details about it and what it means al pisnimi satora and so on and so forth.
Right.
So the Rebbe talks about there an interesting detail. Why does Miyuchas Rashi use the expression that it went out b'hasi ha'layla o'kodim o'rayot? Just say it went out sometime during the night. Why specifically mention the middle of the night?
That's to make a difference.
Right, the answer is, the Rebbe says very interesting like this. We're going to talk about later on the reason why you have a half a log per lamp of the menorah is because the Chachamim figured out that's the amount you need even during the longest night of the year, the night of Tzukos Tevis, that you need that amount to be able to burn through the entire night. But what would they do other times of the year when the nights are shorter? So Bapashis, you would think they just threw out the extra oil. However, you have a Yerushalmi who says that what they would do is they would make the wicks thicker the other times of the year to compensate. Thicker wicks will take up more oil. So the Rebbe makes a whole elaborate calculation over there, contrasting the shortest day with the longest day, and Erev Pesach Shechal B'Shabbos when they would do the lighting extra early or whatever, et cetera, a whole long, elaborate calculation where, to make a long story short, it comes out, you could conceivably, by mistake, use the wrong kind of wick, the wrong time of year, and therefore you wind up, when does the menorah end up going out? In the middle of the night. It lasts through exactly half the night and then goes out. That's why it actually uses the expression, Chatzia Laila, specifically.
They would have been too thin.
They would have been too thick thick. No, too thick, so therefore they would have taken up the oil.
But
fast.
You think that when you go at night, you wake up and go, you see if you had one or two still burning because they were racing with.
Well, there's that also, yeah. Another interesting point, by the way, that's brought up is how on earth.
Normally they would have sold much more.
Well, therefore, in other words, they'll burn out faster. Yeah. But another, okay, so that's one detail. Another interesting detail that's brought up by Achronim is, how would they find out that it went out in the middle of the night anyway? The Heichal was locked at night. The Azara was closed up at night, so they're not doing Avoda in the Azara at night, so okay, they'd be burning Chalav and Vayvarim, fine, but you have a couple of answers, but then again in Mr. Shimon Samanoda that ever talks about, first of all, yes, the Heichal had windows. They could have seen through the windows. You have some of the Kohenim are standing guard, you have Kohenim and Levim standing guard all night. Some of them are in high places. They could see into the Heichal
windows.
Also, you could have, for example, you have a Gemara in Yuma that mentions that during the last 40 years before the Korban, the doors of the Heichal were opening on their own, and that was a simon that the Korban is approaching. But then you could have the doors are opening, and then they could see it. You have a lot of possibilities how it could happen that they actually. Okay. Anyway, onward, back to the Gemara. Okay. So, the Rebbe says this. The Gemara itself says about the Mo. The Rebbe brings this in the Shema Seminar. Yosef Reb Zrika become a barley. Okay, so now Reb Zrika was sitting and wondering as follows. So again, let's recap. We said that if one of the lamps for the menorah, according to Rashi, any of the lamps, according to the Rashba, only the name Arabi, went out and you clean it out and you refill it and relight. Okay. So Yosef Reb Zrika become a barley. So Reb Zrika was sitting and wondering about this as follows. So Noisin Roshemin, so now when you're refilling it with oil, Midah Rishona, do you put in the whole amount of oil, a half a lug? Or commercial chaser, or you put in only exactly as much as you're throwing out. If let's say, for example, so to use Rashi's scenario, let's say it went through half the night. So let's say, for example, again with whatever's point about that you accidentally used thicker than normal wick. Let's say, for example, out of the original half a lug, let's say you have at this point less than eighth of a lug. Say, so do you refill it with an entire half a lug, or do you refill it with only an eighth of a lug, which is all that you need for the rest of the night? So Rabbi Yemiya says, obviously you must fill it. Obviously it must be. You fill it with the original amount, the full half a lug. Eat kama shachasra, because if you're going to say that you only refill it with the exact amount throughout, then how exactly are you supposed to know exactly how much it's missing and you're not going to go measuring. Again, you're not going to go putting scales in there to measure the exact amount that you took out in order to know to put in. Yeah, but okay, apparently they didn't do that. They would just take it and they'd pour it out into a container.
Or we
were talking about later on whether they were separated from the menorah. We're going to discuss that later. But no, they didn't use a syringe. So they didn't use a syringe.
Why can't they let it bind? Pull it up and let it bind.
No, but that's the question. You can't reuse the oil. That's what we're saying. The old oil has ashes in it, or the old oil is left over. You have to spill it out. See?
So the question is,
Rabbi Yumi is answering. The obvious answer is that you have to put in a full half a lug, because otherwise you're not going to know the exact amount to put in. So you might think, maybe you should figure out the exact amount that it'll need for the rest of the night and do that. The problem with that is, or maybe you measure it after. The problem is, if you can't shove a meter, then what do you mean? You only have 7 measuring cups in the mitzvah. Nafish lohumi destruba. Then you're going to have a lot more measurements, because sometimes you're going to also need an 8th and a 16th and whatever, yeah. Okay. Koryale, so Reb Zrika, who asked the question, was very impressed with Reb Yumi's answer. Koryale, he said on him the pasuk, pasuk and tilim, v'hadur ha-tzlach, with your glory, you'll be successful. Rechav al dvar emes, riding on words of truth, va'anvat tzedek, and on nivus, and humility of tzedek. The Gemara in Shabbos explains that hadorcha is also, we can darshan it as if it said v'chadorcha, your chidur, your sharpness is flat, you're successful with it. So therefore, that you're able to answer me such a good true answer. The chidurcha, whatever the Gemara explains in Shabbos. No, that's right. And therefore, the obvious answer is you always have to put an ask. Fine, let's continue on this discussion. Itmar Nami, Amar Rav Abo, Amar Rav Yechanan. So now we have explicitly that Rav Abo says in the name of Rav Yechanan, V'amilo Amar Rav Abba, Amar Rav Chanina, Amar Rebbe, Neir Shekovza, if one of the lamps of Menorah goes out, Nidashin Hashem and Nidashin Afsila, and the oil is no good because it's used, and the wick is no good because it's used, or Nidashin means Deshin. So again, according to Miyocha Sadashi, it means the oil and the wick, because they were used, they're considered like Deshin. They're like ashes. You can't use them anymore. According to Rashi Skaviyab, you mean they're actually, you're talking about they're actually full of ashes. The oil has actually gotten full of ashes, and the wick has gotten reduced to ashes. You have another girsa as well, by the way, that Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayos brings a girsa, niyashen Hashem and niyashen Afsila, that it means that the oil is considered old and the wick is considered old, which again would mean you'd have to replace it. Case study.
Was there any window in it? Was it covered?
So again, that's the Rebbe pointed out before, that yes, there were windows in the Hazel. Oh, you're talking about on top of the Menorah? We're going to discuss soon. Yes, there were. What? There were covers. We're going to discuss soon. There were covers over the lamps of the Menorah. We'll get back.
Once you put in, it will continue burning more than longer than the other.
It should continue. Yeah. Okay. Case at Oisa. So what do you do? Mitzvah. You clean out the lamp. But nice and Hashem and Tamidu to Shina. You put in here. We clearly say that it says you put in the original amount of oil, the half a log, or Mavlika, and you relight. Okay. Amar of Huna braided of Yehoda. Amar of Sheshet. Neir Shem HaMikdash Shal Prakim Hava. The menorah in the Beis HaMikdash was made of prakim. Prakim literally means sections. Rashi translates it as cholyos. However, Rashi explains it doesn't literally mean cholyos as in that you can take it apart. We know the menorah is supposed to be mikshazal, it's all handled out of one piece. It means, Rashi says, that the branches of the menorah were made in such a way that you could bend them downwards and then put them back into position. They were made like, I guess they were made like sort of almost like hinged, I guess, in places, or foldable. I guess they have maybe like different places on it where you could fold them, so you could fold them down in order to be able to clean them and then put them back into position. They're not literally shel cholyos. It's not literally made out of separate pieces, but made in such a way that you could fold it and unfold.
So what was it? What's being?
So they have the top part of each one that contains that has the lamp on it. Because that way they can clean them out, yeah. Because he says like this, he holds that when the Pasuk says that the menorah has to be made out of exactly a kicker of gold, and that it has to be mikra, it has to be hammered out of one piece of gold, a menorah of a neresehaskir, he holds, which we're going to discuss later on in the Amud, a machloikas on this, but he holds that it includes the menorah and the lamps of the menorah, all had to be made out of the same kicker-sized block of gold and hammered. Therefore, they're one solid piece with the menorah. Kiven dem boy hachava, so therefore you have a problem. If you have to do hachava, he loved the prokim havi, if it's not made to be foldable, hachava means cleaning them out.
Yeah.
Cleaning them out. You love the prokim havi, if it's not made like that, you can fold them down, loy hava mitaivala, you're not going to be able to clean it out effectively. Part of the mitzvah is to clean them out every day. So therefore, of necessity, they had to make it in such a way that you could fold them down, and therefore now you have their facing down, and it's easier to clean.
How did they do it then? If it was one block of gold.
So they made it in certain places. They made it thinner than others, so you could fold it and then unfold it. Gold, remember, is very soft and very pliable metal. So they could make it in such a way that you could fold it and then unfold it back into position, and it would stay there. No, they had cups, obviously, because they had to put oil and a lamp in them, and a wick in them. But the point is, if those cups were made that they're fixed to the top and there's no way to move them, then it would be very hard. It would be very hard to clean them out. If they were separated, but that's what we're going to discuss soon. We have them under almost if they were separated, but that's it, yeah.
But they could break if you move up and down every day.
I guess if it broke, then eventually they'd have to.
Every day?
Over time. Yeah, every day they're doing it. So over time, maybe it would. You know what? Later on in the Soviet, when we talk about that, eventually also these lamps of the menorah would get black from the smoke or whatever, the Sfatemis actually learns that in that case, they would have to replace the menorah at that point. They'd have to melt it down and remake it. So in that case, then I guess maybe the same thing would be as far as these foldable branches. I don't know. Yeah, melt it down and then remake it. Make sure the whole nine yards. Yeah. You bring up a good point because you do have, first of all, you have a Mishnah in Chagiga that mentions that they have spares of all the kalim in the Beis HaMikdash in case one becomes tame. But in addition, also we're going to talk later on in the next paragraph, we're going to talk about in the first Beis HaMikdash, Shlomo HaMelech made 10 extra menorahs and 10 extra shulchanos because he had a Kabbalah to do it that way. And therefore, I guess they could have used one of those spares if necessary also. Yeah. But but even in the second Beth Mikdash, the Mishnah in Chagiga says that they had spears of the Kalim in case they became Thomas. Yeah. Okay. So therefore, the Chassidim says, "Kibbutz mitzvah mibaya hatava." Since you have to do a proper hatava, you have to clean them out thoroughly. He lobbed the prokem out. If it's not foldable, like having a tivele, you're not going to be able to do a good job cleaning them out. Okay. The Gemara says, "Meisi." I have a contradiction. A braisa says, "Ketzad oiser." How would he do when he's cleaning out them? When he's cleaning out the lengths of the menorah, misalfon, he would take them off the menorah so we see that they were removable from the menorah. Umanichan ba'oyah, misalfon the lengths. You take the individual lamps off the tops of the menorah. So in other words, they were cups. Each one was like a cup that had a space for oil and a space for a wick. And according to that, they were
golden cups.
Yeah, but according to this, we're saying they weren't actually attached to the menorah. They were on top. They were laying on top of each of the branches, and therefore they could remove them. Umanichan ba'oil. You put them in the oil, meaning in the basin stash. Umakanchan b'sfoig. You would clean them out using either wipe them with a sponge. The nice and bad shaman refill them with oil, or madlikan, and then light them. So we see they were removable from the menorah.
And therefore they didn't have to bend them.
So therefore they didn't have to bend them. The answer is, Huda Omer ki hai tana. Yes, but Rav Huna, Brezir Rav Yehuda, is saying according to a different tana. The tanya, as we learn of Brisa, Chachamim Omim, that Brisa continues. The Chachamim disagree. The Chachamim say, Lohoyim is zizin oisam imakoyma. The Chachamim say they didn't move the lamps from their places. So the Gemara interjects, what does that mean? So what does that mean? The Chachamim of this Braita say that they were removable, they just didn't remove them? Then who is Rav Huna Brei Rav Yehuda going like? If both Tanoim say they were removable, just the first Tana
was bendable.
Says, no, forget bendable. If we say, he was saying that they were completely attached to the body of the menorah. They're attached to the branches, just the branches themselves are bendable. But if we understand the Braita so far that we're saying that the first Manda Omar says you would take them off, and the second one says Loi Hoyum Zizin Oisa, that they wouldn't remove them, implies they could have removed them, they were actually removable, they just didn't, then you don't have a Manda Omar for him to follow. But no, what it means is Elaim Loi Hoyum Zaza Mimakoyma. It means they couldn't move from their place. But those are the Chachamim, which are Huna, but the Huna is following them. If you use the expression Lahim Zizin Oisim Makoma, means they could, if it is physically removable, they just wouldn't remove it. As opposed to if you say Loi Hoisa Zazam Makoma, it couldn't move from its place, then it means why couldn't it move? Because each one is attached to the top of its branch. So then the only other alternative is like Rahuna Breda Rihuda, that the branches themselves would have to be foldable. Bendable. Okay. Uman Chachamim, fine. So who are the Chachamim of the Braita that we just quoted, who said that the lamps of the menorah were non-removable, and that's who Rav Huna Breda Rehuda is going like? Rav Elazar, that would be specifically according to Rav Elazar, Rav Elazar of Tzadik, it says on the side. The Tanya, as we learn, next line, the Tanya, Rav Elazar of Tzadik, right? He says like this, the way they did the Hatzavah Haneris was, each lamp had on top of it a sheet of gold, a gold cover, like a flat sheet on top of it.
What's the top?
Like a top means a sheet.
On top of
each lamp. Now you have to realize, lamps in those days, say you think of like the lamps that we use in our menorahs that we're going to be lighting next month. Lamps in those days usually were a little bit different, were shaped a little bit differently. Typically they were shaped sort of like a teardrop. They had the main body of it, had a large hole to put in the oil. And then the other end would narrow, and you'd have a small hole there that you'd put the wick. So you'd have the wick coming out of that small hole. The body of it would be going into the pool of oil that you'd fill up into the. You can find. No, it was practice for the menorah. It was also except for the menorah. They were made out of gold. They found earthenware ones like that. Occasionally, ones made out of other materials all over the place, all over Eretz Yisrael. And archaeological digs, you look, search for oil lamps, you'll find
the
menorah. The practice, the menorah was the same thing. So therefore, he says, now the difference is, the menorah, the lamps of the menorah, each one had a sheet of gold, a flat piece of gold on top of it. So when he does hatava haneris, and then therefore he needs to be able to clean out the actual inside of it with a larger hole, they would push that metal piece towards the mouth, meaning the part where the wick is, of the lamp. You have to imagine that you could slide it along, or maybe it was like hinged. So it was a cover, so that this way dirt, for example, dirt doesn't fold in, whatever. But yeah, so like this, you had a cover over it. So you'd move that cover toward the narrow end where the wick goes, and then that way the big hole is the wide end where the big hole is open. You could do a cover
the
narrow over there.
The wick says, no?
Yeah, fine. You do, yeah. and to nurse Bashem, and then when he puts oil into it, Dose Klapi Rosha, then he would put this path on the wide end to cover it, and then also Rashi also explains there was a hole in the middle of it through which he would pour in the oil. But this way, the rest of it would be covered, so dirt or whatever doesn't fall.
They didn't put oil when the cover was open?
I guess not. So maybe it wasn't made exactly like that, with a large hole and a small hole. Maybe it was made somewhat differently. But whatever, the point is that there was a hole underneath this cover. There was a hole underneath this cover, and there was a hole in the cover itself, so that when the cover is in position over the body of the nair, then you can pour in the oil through that hole. Okay, so the point is, in other words, the point is, Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik is saying that the lamps for the menorah were fixed in place. So that's the loyhoy says dozen and kaimi. The only thing that could move is that cover. The lamps themselves couldn't be moved, and therefore, Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik is saying the only way to clean them out effectively, therefore, would be to bend them down.
It's not a stira.
According to him, that's how they had to do it.
According to him,
well, that's what we're saying. According to the Tanakhama, the Braisa, the lamps themselves were removable, and therefore you didn't need
them. The covers had a hole where the liquid comes through them.
Yeah. No, because we're saying no. No. The lamp itself had a hole for the wick to come through.
They came off those sides.
Yeah.
It was not at the extremity of the lamp.
Yes.
And in the middle of the lamp, there was a hole where you could pour the oil in.
Right.
Yeah, that hole was there, I guess, to have oxygen come in and to pour the oil.
I guess it would probably help with that also, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it probably help with that also, sure.
I don't know
if I can find a picture quickly right now, but yeah.
The nose was open to the sky, so water would go in and put the fire up.
It was inside the hay hole. It's not like...
I had a cover in the roof.
Well, it was inside the hayfel, yeah. The roof had a roof. Here, for example, here's some pictures of oil lamps from those times.
Exactly.
So you can see, like, it has the body of it has a big hole put in the oil, and then the narrow end has a small hole where the wick would come out of. So the ones on the menorah of the pastures were shaped much like that.
Right.
Okay.
And you see, there's one with a flame on this one.
Yeah. Indeed, yeah, that one, for example, yeah.
Let me take a
look. Okay. All right. Going on in the Gemara. Over Plugta Dehani Tanoi. So the Gemara points out this is the same, actually, you know what, it's 9:30 now, it's almost Meyer. So okay, well, it's 9:28. Yeah. Okay, so we'll leave the continuation of the discussion tomorrow.
Yeah.